Welcome to Words to Live By, a podcast series hosted by the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute. Each week, we will share some of the wit and wisdom of Ronald Reagan. In essence, Words to Live By, made up of radio addresses and speeches he delivered from the 1960s through the 1980s. Every December, Americans celebrate their memorable cultural icons when the Kennedy Center bestows its annual honors to those in the performing arts for their lifetime contributions. Since 1978, the honors have been presented annually each December to five honorees, followed by a gala celebration. The original strategy was that these unique individuals were people who have contributed to society, not just someone who happens to have a pop record hit at the moment. Also, the intention was to do not just another award show. Do you recall the first host? It was Leonard Bernstein in 1978. And the White House got involved by inviting the honorees first to the White House for an initial presentation by the president. So, for 2022, who are the honorees? Well, George Clooney, Amy Grant, Gladys Knight, Tanya Leon, and you too. In this podcast, we'll focus on the two ceremonies held at the White House. The first, 40 years ago in 1982, honored George Abbott, Eugene Normandy, Lillian Gish, Benny Goodman, and Gene Kelly. The president honored in 1984, Lena Horne, Arthur Miller, Giancarlo Menotti, Isaac Stern, and Danny Kaye. And in the second half of the podcast, I'll share a bit about those who were offered the honor but declined. So let's go back to December 5th, 1982. Here then is our very gracious 40th president at the White House.
Someone once said that an artist is a dreamer consenting to dream of the actual world. That description is particularly apt for the five artists that we honor tonight. George Abbott, Eugene Ormandy, Lillian Gish, Benny Goodman, and Gene Kelly are five American dreamers who have made their dreams come true for the rest of us. In the years they've devoted to their crafts and during their countless performances, they have lifted our lives from the commonplace to share the sublime. George Abbott created and contributed to hit after spectacular hit through his acting, writing, producing, and directing. The Abbott touch made magic on the stages of America's theaters. We laughed with him during the pajama game. When a funny thing happened on the way to the forum. We shed a sentimental tear during A Tree Grows in Brooklyn and soared with the music and dance in productions like The Boys from Syracuse, Pal Joey, and Damn Yankees. Mr. Abbott, I'm not sure enough yet about calling him George. I'm temporarily between engagements. But he has surely earned his reputation as the Dean of Broadway Showmen. America was lucky to lure another great talent, Eugene Ormandy, from Hungary. He was music director of the famous Philadelphia Orchestra for nearly half a century, conducting, programming, and exacting an unrivaled freshness and vitality from his talented musicians. But this great man, who we're so proud today to call American, began life far from Philadelphia. He grew up as a child prodigy in Budapest. At two, he could easily identify symphonies. Almost before he could stand, he was playing a specially made fiddle. And at four, he loudly interrupted a violin recital to announce you played an F sharp instead of an F. At five, he was admitted to the Royal Academy of Music as its youngest pupil. He later said, "My lessons filled my days with work and with dreams. I had tasted the intoxicating wine of being a Wunderkind. And my whole ambition was to be a wonder man as well." Well, tonight, Mr. Ormandy, your fellow Americans want you to know that in their eyes, you've made it.
Mm-hmm.
Kish is a homegrown talent and beauty whose performances set a standard of enigmatic allure that has never been equaled. As a child actress during her first performance, she burst from behind some scenery at the sound of a scripted explosion and ran screaming into the footlights. The audience loved her that night as they've continued to love her throughout her career. Such successes as Birth of a Nation, La Boheme, The Scarlet Letter, and many others later to be known early in her career as the First Lady of the Silent Screen. She went on to other great accomplishments in the talkies and on the stage. A normally caustic critic once wrote of the Gish Girl that her smile is a bit of trembling happiness. The tears of the Gish Girl are the tears that Johann Strauss wrote in the Rosemary of his waltzes. Her smile is as enticing today. Her talent as compelling as it was when she first sparkled in the silent silver screen. And the talent of Benny Goodman is another example of the diversity that makes our people and our culture so rich. Benny Goodman, the son of an immigrant, Chicago tailor, also took up his craft as a child. But he got his training in the local synagogue orchestra and at Hull House, the noted Chicago settlement house founded by Jane Addams. He began playing on bandstands while still only a boy and became known in musical circles as the kid in the short pants. By the time he was 20, he had made records, led a combo, and played with a well-known band. And 8 years later, he ushered in the era of swing on the stage of New York's Paramount Theater, and his music took America by storm. 25 years after that, he took his band to Moscow, where, as one writer observed, the swing music that had once set the jitterbugs dancing in the Paramount aisles almost blew down the Iron Curtain. He wouldn't like to make a return trip. Although in his career he's mastered everything from big bands to classics, Benny Goodman will always be known to Americans and the world as the King of Swing. And the fifth artist we honor tonight is an old friend of mine, friend of Nancy's, Gene Kelly. Someone once described Gene as having an American baseball personality, and I think that's just about right. He's a talented dancer, singer, and actor, choreographer, and director, and a man I personally admire. As a boy, he saw himself as more of a football player and went to his dancing lessons under parental duress. But by the time he was in college, he had founded a dancing school and after graduation tried his luck on Broadway. His talents won him a small dancing part in Leave It to Me with Mary Martin, and his career took off. He starred in Mr. Abbott's Pal Joy and The Best Foot Forward before moving to Hollywood to make film classics like For Me and My Gal, Cover Girl, and, of course, Singing in the Rain. Bob Hope used to say that every time Gene Kelly dances, Fred Astaire starts counting his money. Gene isn't dancing much anymore, but he's encouraging promising young dancers to develop their talent. And his legendary accomplishments are ours to enjoy at the turn of a reel or by closing our eyes and remembering. To have seen Gene Kelly dance makes most of us start counting our blessings. The famous clergyman Henry Ward Beecher once said that every artist dips his brush in his own soul and paints his own nature into his pictures. The artists that we honor tonight have painted a panorama with their lives, a spectacular display of talent, achievement, and personal integrity that challenges all of us to be the best that we can be. They reward our spirit by allowing us from time to time to mingle our everyday world with their world of pageantry and dreams. And how lucky we are that they're Americans. They've enriched us all. George Abbott, Eugene Ormandy, Lillian Gish, Benny Goodman, and Gene Kelly, on behalf of all Americans, thank you very much.
More about the Kennedy Center honorees after this message.
The Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation is the nonprofit organization created by President Reagan himself, and specifically charged by him with continuing his legacy and sharing his principles: individual liberty, economic opportunity, global democracy, and national pride. We must remain vigilant and work together to share these conservative principles with younger generations. Your role is critical to move our mission forward. Thank you for your continued support. Please visit reaganfoundation.org/give. That's reaganfoundation.org/give.
Now, back to the story. Not everyone who was offered the Kennedy Center honor accepted. For example, pianist Vladimir Horowitz was to be an honoree, but the selection committee withdrew the offer when Horowitz conditioned his acceptance on being honored alone and at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Actress Katharine Hepburn declined the committee's first offer, but then she relented in 1990. Turns out Doris Day repeatedly turned down the honor because her fear of flying prevented her from attending the ceremony. So let's go back and listen to our 40th president honor Lena Horne, Arthur Miller, Giancarlo Menotti, Isaac Stern, and Danny Kaye. Let's listen.
Well, good evening. Nancy and I are delighted to welcome you to the White House, a home that belongs to you and to all Americans. You know, when this good old house was built, our country was little more than a band of towns, a very thin band running along the eastern seaboard. People clinging to the edge of a vast and untamed continent. And when it came to art, drama, and music, Americans looked back to the old country, from where most had just come. But as our nation grew and our people pushed west, plowing fields, felling forests, and building new cities and towns, a new and distinctive culture began to develop. A culture that was as fertile as this new land, as bold and confident as the American people. It took on the twang of the frontier fiddle, the joy of jazz, the excellence of the new American orchestras, and the sparkle of Hollywood movies. And today, our nation has crowned her greatness with grace, and we gather this evening to honor five artists who have helped her to do so. Lena Horne, when you started making movies, a columnist wrote, "Lena Horne has put dignity into daring. She has given glamour manners. Hollywood has never before seen such a combination. Neither had the world." And Lena, you got your start at the age of 16 as a chorus girl at the legendary Cotton Club and then broke into the big band scene as a singer with Charlie Barnett. And during this period, one observer remarked that your voice could thaw the ice in a customer's drink. And in the 1940s, you became the first black woman ever to be signed to a long-term Hollywood contract. And you made unforgettable films like Cabin in the Sky and an American classic, Stormy Weather. You often had to battle prejudice, but your work expanded the roles available to black performers. During the 1960s, you became an ardent champion of civil rights, appearing in benefits, joining protests, and speaking out again and again. And through it all, you played a direct and vital role in the cause of justice. Today, Lena, your voice and style are as powerful and as renowned as ever. Your recent show, Lena, the Lady and Her Music, was the longest-running one-woman show in Broadway history. And you know something, Lena? After 5 decades, when you sing, our spines still tingle, and the ice still melts. And Arthur Miller, you grew up in Harlem, graduated from high school, decided to study drama at the University of Michigan. You worked for 2 years, including a job as a shipping clerk in a warehouse to save money for your tuition. After college, you wrote radio dramas for the CBS, Columbia Workshop, and NBC's Cavalcade of America. supporting yourself by working as a truck driver and a steam fitter in the Brooklyn Navy Yard. Your first Broadway effort, The Man Who Had All the Luck, closed after four performances in November of 1944. Your disappointment would have made many young men give up, not you. In 1947, you returned to Broadway with a play that no one who sees or reads will ever forget, All My Sons. 2 years later, the Broadway curtain rose on a new Arthur Miller drama, one that many critics consider the greatest American play ever written, Death of a Salesman. And that play ran on Broadway for 742 performances, was made into a motion picture, and today, more than three decades later, is still enjoying revivals around the world. Since that brilliant work, you've continued to make rich contributions to American letters with plays like The Crucible and A View from the Bridge. And today, Arthur Miller, you're one of America's most renowned living playwrights, and you're still writing strong. Giancarlo Menotti, you wrote your first opera back in Italy at the age of 11. When you were 13, your mother enrolled you in a conservatory in Milan. And in 1928, when you were 17, she took you to the Curtis Institute of Music in Philadelphia, armed with a letter from the wife of conductor Arturo Toscanini. Years later, your teacher at the Curtis Institute would recall, and I quote, "Early on, I told him, Giancarlo, if I'm to teach you, we must come to an agreement, you and I. I promise you that I will be uncompromisingly severe. Do you promise to put in some very hard work?" Well, Giancarlo promised, and he abided by his agreement. And today, millions are grateful that you did. You've given a glorious medium new life with such operas as The Consul, The Saint of Bleecker Street, and one of the best-loved operas of all time, the Christmas classic, Amahl and the Night Visitors. Giancarlo Menotti, you have always kept your Italian citizenship. But you've spent so many years among us and contributed so much to our national life. Perhaps tonight, you will allow us to claim you as an honorary American. And Isaac Stern, you were born in Russia and moved to San Francisco with your parents when you were one. Your mother gave you piano lessons, but at eight, you were fascinated by the sound of a friend playing the violin. At 10, you began formal training in the violin in the San Francisco Conservatory. Your studies were paid for by a woman who recognized your promise. As you put it years later, "I got my break because of the faith and belief private people showed in my work." At 11, you appeared with the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra. At 17, you debuted in New York. And by your mid-20s, you were performing some 90 concerts a year. Today, your repertoire ranges from the classics to the moderns, and one critic has called you the only major violinist exclusively a product of American environment and training. And you've spent a lifetime showing how that American environment glitters with artistic excellence. Danny Kaye, during one of your tours in England, Prime Minister Anthony Eden remarked, "Gad, sir, they treat him as if he were a nation." Born in Brooklyn, you made your acting debut at age 5 in the role of a watermelon seed. At 13, you left home to become a clowning busboy on the Borscht Circuit in the Catskill Mountains. In your early 20s, you joined a troupe touring the Orient. Your resourcefulness on that tour became legendary. During a typhoon in Osaka, for instance, you sat on the edge of the stage, sang every song you knew, and spotlighted yourself by holding a flashlight in each hand. When that tour was over, you played nightclubs in London and throughout the American East. At Camp Tamament in Pennsylvania, you met Sylvia Fine, a pianist and composer. and her witty, sophisticated satire was perfectly suited to your delivery and led to a great collaboration. In 1940, your career soared when you stopped the Broadway show Lady in the Dark by performing a number in which you reeled off the names of 50 Russian composers in 38 seconds. Something else happened in 1940. Sylvia Fine became Mrs. Danny Kaye. And signed by Sam Goldwyn, you starred in a succession of hit movies, including Wonder Man, The Kid from Brooklyn, The Inspector General, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, in which you played no fewer than seven roles, and the much-loved Hans Christian Andersen. Forgive me, Danny, but I can't help wishing I'd had one or two of those roles. In 1970, you returned to Broadway as Noah in Richard Rodgers' musical, Two by Two. And when you injured your leg, you decided that the show must go on, and for 10.5 months, you performed on crutches while wearing a plaster cast. In the 1950s, Danny, you took on a new role, becoming ambassador at large for UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Organization. And since then, you've made scores of trips around the world on behalf of needy children, and appeared at countless benefits as a guest symphony conductor. Danny Kaye, comedian, actor, singer, and conductor. You've brought aid to thousands of children and helped millions of adults to feel young at heart. Each of the artists we honor tonight overcame hardship, and each suffered setbacks and failures. Indeed, Isaac Stern once said that after his New York debut, and I quote, "I was convinced that I didn't know my elbow from A flat." Yet they worked long and hard, following their dreams, and succeeded in bringing music, drama, and laughter into our lives. And tonight, as we appreciate their work, let us take comfort and inspiration from their lives. Lena Horne, Arthur Miller, Giancarlo Menotti, Isaac Stern, and Danny Kaye, on behalf of all Americans, thank you. God bless you.
Thank you for listening. For more information on the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute, including information on how to become a member, information on upcoming exhibits at the Reagan Library, and more information on the legacy of President Reagan, please visit ReaganFoundation.org. And don't forget to like and follow the Reagan Foundation on all social media platforms.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Words to Live By podcast in your iTunes or Google Play stores and on other podcast platforms as they become available. New episodes of Words to Live By come out every Tuesday. Like what you hear? Check out our A Reagan Forum podcast featuring great speeches delivered at the Reagan Library. New episodes drop every Thursday. And don't forget to follow at Ronald Reagan on Facebook, at Ronald Reagan 40 on Twitter, and Reagan Foundation on YouTube. Also, search for us on SoundCloud and Stitcher.